Good morning, and at the outset I bring greetings to you all from my institution, JN Medical College, Belgaum in Karnataka. It's a pleasure to be a part of this distinguished panel and speaking to such an interested audience. And what I'll be sharing in the next few minutes is some of our experience working with our US partner institutions in conducting and implementing community-based research related to maternal and child health. Obviously, some of the studies that I am discussing were funded by NIH and WHO, but I don't have any financial conflict of interest. One of the study that I will be describing does use misoprostol off-label at that time for prevention of postpartum hemorrhage. Now, our journey into maternal and child health community-based research started way back in 2001, so it's about 10 years back, when the NICHD, with funding from Gates Foundation, started the Global Network for Women's and Children's Health Research, and we were one of the 10 sites within the network. And we are in southern part of India, in the state of Karnataka, the northwestern part. So we are midway between Bombay and Bangalore, somewhat rural, underdeveloped region of the state. The Women's and Children's Health Research Unit at our institution was basically established under the Global Network grant to basically generate community-based research evidence to address maternal and newborn health issues, and also work with the ministries in scaling up some of the known interventions into policy and programs. So that is a mission on which we have been working for the last 10 years. One of the first issues that we have tried to address is related to the leading cause of maternal mortality, that's postpartum hemorrhage. And India has the dubious distinction of contributing almost 20% of the maternal deaths, and majority of these deaths are preventable and are due to postpartum hemorrhage. So the first trial that we conducted was a randomized placebo-controlled trial of oral misoprostol 600 microgram for prevention of postpartum hemorrhage in a rural community setting. The study site was spread over four primary health centers covering a population of nearly 100,000. The study was conducted by auxiliary nurse midwives who were responsible for the administration of the intervention and measurement of the outcome. At the time we started the study, during the three-year enrollment period, we had over 4,000 women screened, and 1,620 were actually randomized to either receive 600 microgram of misoprostol or placebo. One of the issues that we had to deal with was to come up with an objective measurement of the primary outcome, and the group developed this blood collection drape with a calibrated receptacle, and we actually ended up validating the drape, and we have fairly good accurate measurement of the postpartum blood loss with this device. So the trial showed that it is possible to reduce the incidence of acute postpartum hemorrhage by about 47% with the administration of oral misoprostol, and severe PPH by almost 80%. In terms of the number needed to treat, it's 1 in 18, and we also found that some of the secondary outcomes, like the need for transfer, need for blood transfusion, additional use of iatrogenic drugs or surgical procedures, were also reduced in the treatment group. We had an international congress to disseminate the findings of the study, and all of the key stakeholders, right from WHO to USAID to NIH and most of the interest groups, were able to attend this meeting and kind of fell in line with some of the work that Dr. Harshad's group had initiated a couple of years ago. So this was one of the series of international congresses on postpartum hemorrhage, which kind of built up the momentum towards scaling up the acceptance of misoprostol for prevention of PPH. The government of India also endorsed the use of misoprostol for prevention of PPH in the 2000 guidelines for skilled birth attendants by ANMs. And even in the revised guidelines which came out last year, they still continue to endorse the use of misoprostol in settings where refrigeration is not possible and where oxytocin is not practically feasible to implement. Not only that, even the WHO finally, based on evidence from four community-based trials, including ours, finally made the move to endorse the use of misoprostol for prevention of PPH and has moved the drug into the essential list of essential medicines just this recently in June. And as of now, more than 17 countries have registered or have approved misoprostol for the prevention of postpartum hemorrhage. So it's a kind of an example of how a research evidence eventually translated into policy and is now being scaled up for practice. We have been involved in some of the other PPH related work. We're one of the sites of the WHO trial as well. We're also looking at other options for management of PPH in these low resource settings. One of them being evaluation of sublingual misoprostol, where it's probably possible to scale down the dosage and minimize some of the side effects like shivering and hyperparexia that are known to occur with misoprostol. We're also involved in the evaluation of a WHO safe childbirth checklist. The manuscript is under publication right now. And we're also involved in some other HIV cervical cancer prevention research project. The next major challenge that we kind of addressed was related to neonatal mortality. And again, you'll hear more about some of these studies from my colleague, Dr. Wally Carlo. The reason why I'm bringing it up here is that India again has the dubious distinction of contributing to the maximum proportion of early neonatal mortality. So we were one of the sites in the global network first breath trial. The unique feature about this is that this was probably the first time that an attempt was made to train all levels of birth attendants, right from traditional birth attendants all the way up to gynecologists and pediatricians in newborn resuscitation in community settings. As I said, you will hear more about the results of this trial from my distinguished colleague. But what this led to was the development of a simplified curriculum by the American Academy of Pediatrics, where the NRP was adapted, the neonatal resuscitation program was adapted to low resource settings and came out in the form of helping babies breathe. And again, we were one of the five sites who had the opportunity to field test the curriculum. We shared the results with the congressional staff last year in DC in June. The Global Development Alliance was formed with all the key stakeholders signing up to scale up HBB. And we are right now gearing up for evaluating the program in terms of number of lives saved. On the home front, even nationally, the government of India also came out for the first time with a comprehensive training curriculum for training providers for newborn resuscitation. Till this initiative, the only training that was being provided to peripheral healthcare providers was essential newborn care, which did not include the newborn resuscitation. But the new curriculum now incorporates both the WHO ENC as well as the helping babies breathe components. One of the concerns that has always been raised is, especially in low resource settings, if you resuscitate a baby, maybe you will save them, but will there be a neurological deficit? Will there be a consequence on the quality of life of the baby? And so again, we, as a follow-up of the first breath trial, we did another trial looking at the resuscitated babies by providing a home-based intervention to families of those babies using the Partners for Learning curriculum. And again, I'll defer the discussion about the results to Dr. Valli. But what we did do was to ensure that the home visitors who had trained for the Partners for Learning curriculum were able to sustain their efforts. So in a small remote town, we have a child development center where these women from the community who have been trained and who have worked on the project are now continuing to maintain their skills by providing support to the families from nearby villages. The second cycle of funding for the Global Network started in 2007, and I would like to mention a couple of studies that are major initiatives that have occurred after that. One of them is the Maternal and Newborn Health Registry, which is a pregnancy tracking system to capture the outcomes of pregnancy, both of the mother and the newborn. So this effort started at our site in 2008, and the other sites joined in as well. And as Dr. Derman mentioned earlier, we have close to 200,000 births in this registry as of now. As far as Belgaum is concerned, we are now covering a population of almost 700,000 spread over 226 villages. We have a distributed data entry system where the MNH registry data is brought in and digitalized and transmitted to our server and then on to the data coordinating center, and the NIH gets the final reports. So as of September 2011, at our site alone, we have more than or close to 80,000 births, I mean pregnancies, included in the registry, and we have almost 100% follow-up in terms of capturing the pregnancy outcomes and the 42-day follow-up of these babies. Now the registry basically serves as the base to capture the outcomes of any intervention that we do. And one of the major, or probably the more complex and challenging study that we just now are completing is the Emergency Obstetric and Newborn Care Trial, where we kind of try to use a systems approach comprising of community mobilization to create awareness among the villagers about maternal and newborn health issues, trying to develop their own solutions to the problems or challenges to healthcare, upgrading the skills of the birth attendants, and working with the referral facilities to improve the quality of care. Hopefully by January, in the new year, we should have the outcome or the results of this trial. So we're keeping our fingers crossed. That's the team which worked on this project. Basically, we have been working with the healthcare system, the medical officers, and the community volunteers in implementing most of our studies. And we shared the experiences of the community in terms of the evaluation of the community mobilization effort with the community leadership through closeout meetings last month. Some of the current research projects that we are now involved in are looking at optimizing service delivery of misoprostol, either whether one should go ahead with universal prophylaxis or should the misoprostol be limited to only those women who have a tendency to bleed beyond a certain cutoff. We are also looking at scaling up the use of oxytocin via Unijet in community settings and clindamycin for reducing preterm births. In terms of research related to child health, we are just about beginning the study of antenatal corticosteroids for preterm birth, evaluation of HBV in saving lives, and micronutrient supplementation for infant growth and development. Now, what this has done for us is a whole bunch of publications coming out of these studies, including some in fairly high impact journals. Our area of work has expanded from just one district in 2001 to three districts now. Our collaborations, which started with University of Illinois in 2001, has now gone up to 9 universities across the United States. Our funding base has also increased. All this has been possible because of the strong support and leadership that has been provided by Dr. Linda Wright from NICHD and our colleagues, folks from WHO, and the support of Gates Foundation. So on that note, I would like to conclude and would like to thank both Dr. Derman and Dr. Omar Khan for having me here. Thank you.